You could be anywhere doing anything, but you're hanging out with us, and we appreciate that. So wherever you're listening and however you're listening, we appreciate you guys for listening. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Game Player Podcast. Alex Goodwin is my name. You can follow me on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. Again, on the artist formerly known as Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. That's T as in tacos, S as in Seagrams, M as in margaritas. Kennedy Miller, my guy.
What's going on, fellas? How y'all doing today?
Man, I am doing all right, And, you know, where can the folks find you on Twitter, Ken?
Man, you can find me on Twitter at _KennedyMiller_. Again, that's _KennedyMiller_.
And, you know, I just want the record to show this is probably the first time, I think in about 4 years, since we have actually been in person doing this podcast. I think the last time was like right when COVID began. And was that when Bill O'Brien traded DeAndre Hopkins for an empty bag of chips?
I think so.
Today's real special.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Today being a special day, we also have a very, very, very special guest. You can catch him on Friday nights at Stafford High School, coordinating that defense. Our special guest today, my brother, my twin brother, Bryce Goodwin. How you doing today, dog?
I'm doing good. How y'all doing today?
Man, chilling, chilling, man.
I'm great.
Where can the folks find you? Twitter, Instagram, all of that, dog.
You can find me on Twitter at Coach B Goodwin. Coach B Goodwin is where you can find me on.
All right. Let's get into it. So, Ken, I said S as in Seagram's, like Seagram's gin, which I feel like you've been drinking a lot of because the Cowboys have lost the last two games in a row. So coming off of the big victory against the Eagles after the loss to the Bills and the loss to the Dolphins two consecutive weeks on the road, how are you feeling now?
A little frustrated, I'd say. That was a really good win against Philadelphia, but it just kind of fit our MO so far as winning at home. I think we won 15 straight at home. And pretty much most of those 15 wins have been in dominating fashion. And then we go on the road to Buffalo and another MO is being fit, but on the other side. And that's being able to stop the run. We had a very tough time stopping the run. James Cook, whatever his name is, he went crazy on us. Man, I think Josh Allen had like 85, 90 yards passing, something like that.
Like 15 times.
Yeah, like it was a rainy game. And like I said, it fit the blueprint of the season so far, even going back to the Arizona game, which is they can be had in the run game. Now we go to Miami, and we actually outrushed Miami. But I didn't think the defense played bad. But again, another MO. How disciplined are we really? Like so many penalties, illegal shifts, false starts. Holdings, face masks, all those things all usually start to rear their ugly head. And again, like I said, I felt like the defense played well. They only gave up 19 points for majority of the game, only gave up one touchdown to a Dolphins offense that is really good and explosive. Could have a potential MVP out there. But you got to win that game. Like, you should have won. The opening drive, you tell they had scripted it perfectly. Drove down the field, got to the 1 yard line. I don't know how Tony Pollard doesn't score that. I don't.
Because he's not Ezekiel Elliott.
That's how he does. He's not Tony Pollard from last year. He doesn't have that same burst.
In the run game, they haven't been that good this year. And so, like, offensively, if it's failed, at least to me, the offense is going to go as far as CeeDee Lamb goes. Right.
Correct.
This offense took off in week 5 or week 6. Once they started force feeding CeeDee Lamb, the idea to me is like, why didn't you know BBW Jason Garrett? You need to force feed CeeDee Lamb, like get the ball to your best player as often as you possibly can. But after him, like CeeDee Lamb is like, what, 100 catches? Jake yep. Ferguson is like 53, yep. 54. And the next closest guy is Brandon Cooks with like 29.
And see, like Tony Pollard doesn't score that, doesn't have the same burst. They go down, they score, getting the ball to CeeDee Lamb. CeeDee Lamb makes an impressive play. That was in the first quarter. CeeDee Lamb didn't even get another target until the fourth. How? I'm sure I don't know. But again, you know, we score, we do what we're supposed to do. And then Miami, of course, winds it down, kicks the game-winning field goal. I feel like if we had got the ball back, I feel like Dak would have gamed it. Like, I feel confident that he would have won that game.
So you have faith in Dak Prescott?
To an extent. It is a short extent.
I'm just not feeling Dakota.
He puts me in a very difficult situation because I've seen too many different versions of him, right? I saw him against Tampa Bay last year, and he goes crazy. Like, one of the best games he's ever played in the first round of the playoffs. Was he, like, over 300 yards, almost perfect QBR, right? And then the next week is like night and day. We play San Francisco, and he just looks like
pedestrian.
Yeah. And that's what Dak is, right? Like, he's good enough to keep his job. He's good enough to make you want to root for him.
Hey, what did Cam Newton say about those kind of guys? Game managers.
I mean, I think there's a difference between a game. I think Cam looks at it like, these are dudes like your Dak Prescott, your Tua's, your Brock Purdy's, guys like this. They're guys who they need good players around them to be successful. And that is absolutely fair. Most guys in the NFL do. Cam Newton, like at Auburn, it was like they went to the frat house. They went to the white frat house. Like, all right, let's get some offensive line. Then they went, all right, let's go get a couple of. All right, them Qs, those alphas, they look kind of big. All right, you want to play receiver or something? All right, cool. Like, they went out there with 11 randoms and Cam won a national championship. In the pros, Cam, his number one receiver for a Super Bowl run was Ted Ginn. His number two was Philly Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, there is, I don't like the term game manager. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, it's a, like, because I think we think game manager. I think about, like, a dude like Trent Dilfer or Andy Dalton. You know what I mean? A Kirk Cousins.
No, I don't. I think game manager has a different connotation. So the way that I like to describe it is that when you look at a guy who I consider a game manager, and again, this is a sliding scale. You can go back and forth between being a game changer and a game manager as your career progresses. So I think as a game manager, you're looking at a player who has a potentially lower ceiling, but a higher floor. Right. So I know what I'm going to get from this guy. So I put on the film from Dak Prescott and I know what I'm going to get from him and I know what I'm not going to get. Mm-hmm. Right. Versus I look at a game changer and the ceiling is all the way up. But that also means that the floor is all the way down. So he could either give me something really, really good, or it could be something where I'm like, you're doing the most. And I think your risk tolerance is kind of where you stand on that thing.
And I think, what was it like with a guy like Dak? It always, with him specifically, his first year, it was, we gonna run the ball. We have great offensive line. We have a great young running back. We've got Dez and Witten. I think Terrence Williams is still playing receiver for the Cowboys then. And then
I believe so.
2 years later, he finally took off as a quarterback once they traded for Amari Cooper. Mm-hmm. And then they drafted Michael Gallup. And then they drafted CeeDee Lamb. And the offense took off. So as the talent got better around him, he got better, right? Like, Dak isn't the guy who you can just send out there. Like, you can't send, well, I was going to say, you can't send Dak out there with the dudes Mahomes is out there with and expected to work, because right now it ain't working for Mahomes. And side note, did you see what Mahomes got his what he got his offensive lineman for Christmas?
Those
the golf carts.
Yeah, he got them the golf carts. You know what he probably got Kadarius Toney and them?
What?
Moving boxes. He probably, like, they probably went to their house like, ooh, what did we get, Patrick? You see them boxes? I also send them U-Haul to your house. Like, just pick whatever day they're coming. Because with Mahomes specifically, like, you could be a game changer, I think, but at a certain point, you still need those dudes around you to just be mildly competent.
Mm-hmm.
Line up on sides. Mm-hmm. When I throw you the ball, catch the ball. You're butt naked open. Well, you know what I'm saying?
The lining up on sides thing, I think, is kind of a two-headed issue, right? So my thing is, and I haven't seen the clip all the way through. I haven't watched the all 22. But when that receiver comes to the line of scrimmage, he's taught to check with that official.
No doubt.
If he pointed at that official and gave him the thumbs up and the official said nothing, that's no longer that guy's fault. Because I checked and I asked. Now, if he just came and lined up with his head over the football, then yeah, that's completely on you.
Because I'm like, Kadarius Toney was so far offsides. I'm like, there's no way he could have possibly checked. And like, he lined up offsides. Valdez Scantling lined up offsides again. And the problem with the Chiefs, at least for me, has been what has been this year is they won a Super Bowl last year with basically the same receivers, minus Juju Smith-Schuster.
Mm-hmm.
This year, it's those exact same guys. And look, they don't have a number one guy. They don't even have a number two either. Those guys they've got out there, what was it, Sky Moore, Richie James, McCole Hardman, Kadarius Toney, they might as well have five Kevontae Turpins out there, because mm-hmm. that's literally what they are. So they got a huge problem. Andy Reid don't like to run the ball, and they can really only throw the ball to either Travis Kelce or the guy from SMU, Rashee Rice. Mm-hmm. Other than that, the rest of them dudes are just out there running wind sprints, because Mahomes cannot really trust them to either catch the ball or just do basic things.
Well, but I think the problem with that is twofold, right? Because it's like, if I'm not emphasizing the basic things and I'm digging deep into my bag of trick plays, which Andy Reid is known for, these exotic formations, you know, digging back wing T stuff, you know, GY counters, a bunch of odd formations and odd plays. Well, I'm not stressing those basics. So to me, when I see a team that pulls out those kind of things early in games, especially in negative territory, you've given up on just running the ball. Mm-hmm. You've given up on calling your basic pass concepts because you clearly already believe you can't. So they can't get any better if you're just going, you know, we're just going to go away from it. There's no reason we should be trying to execute a handoff to Patrick Mahomes on like the negative 30. That doesn't make any sense.
Fair. Them trying to cheap it out on the receiver tip, I understand it. Right. Once you pay your quarterback, everything else, you kind of got to, you know,
figure it out.
Yeah. You got to put some water in. You got to, you know, you got to water down the Kool-Aid a little bit. You got to make this stretch.
Right.
They're making a stretch to the point where it don't even look right. You ever, Ken, has your mama ever gone out of town and y'all at the house with your daddy?
Oh, yeah.
And instead of going to HEB or whatever, or the Walmart, wherever y'all used to go for the food, that week y'all go into Food Town or Foodorama. You're not getting orange juice. This is orange drink. Yeah, you're drinking that Tampico. Right? But Mahomes, he ain't even out there with no Tampico. This is like orange concentrate. And you got to mix it up yourself. Like, that's what he got out there right now. And it's, they looked horrible against Vegas. They looked absolutely terrible. And this isn't going to get any better from here. And it's really bad because the previous problems that they had, the defense wasn't as good. The offensive line wasn't as good. They've got that stuff fixed. Now, the offense really can't function very well because they can't do basic things like catch the ball. Or in the case of Kadarius Toney, line up.
Yeah, and it doesn't help them that Travis Kelce got injured in training camp, which I think he just doesn't really have that same, like, he doesn't look the same as he has in years past.
It's like he had two early drops in that game.
Right.
That I was like, wow, it's very uncharacteristic.
And so, you know, that's been Mahomes' security blanket. And so, like, when in doubt, like, I'm gonna find 87. And now 87 is, you know, he's getting up there too. Like, he's not young. And so the receiving core is a problem. The receiving core is a problem for Kansas City, and it does put a limit to how far they can go, especially when you look at what Baltimore did on Christmas Day against San Francisco.
How stupid do you think Arthur Blank has to feel? Because this past offseason, Lamar Jackson was available. He's like, no, I'm good.
I mean, came out and said it too.
Yeah. When the spring before, he was falling all over himself to try to get that sexual degenerate, Deshaun Watson. And Lamar Jackson is twice the player that Freaky D has been at his peak, right? Like, you fell all over yourself, and half the league did. For Deshaun Watson, and when a dude that's better, a dude who won an MVP in his second year in the league, comes up, everybody's like, nah, we good. We will stick with Desmond Ridder. We're good with Sam Howell.
I don't think their issue was so much Lamar Jackson, the player. I think their issue was Lamar Jackson, the guy, right? Like, you know, just it's kind of the whole appearance of what it is.
What's wrong with him, Bryce?
What's wrong with him? I personally don't have a problem with him, but I'm saying, okay. So you have to sit down and put on your owner's hat. This is a gentleman who at that point was representing himself.
Talk to us, Arthur.
Okay. So now when I'm looking at that, and it's already a tense situation with Baltimore. He says, I want out. I don't know. You know, at that point, you're like trying to talk yourself into it. But at the same time, it's odd. Because he talked himself into Deshaun Watson.
Into a danger to the community.
Who was in the midst of a quite expansive amount of litigation. And so it's just...
Like, you can't let Deshaun Watson go any... You know right now, he doing rehab. They got three people standing over him, looking at him.
Right. Like, I mean, I get what you're saying. I was just, you know, asking questions just to ask. But if I put on my owner's hat and I'm owning the Atlanta Falcons... And I can get Lamar Jackson out there, I'm doing whatever it takes. Now, it'd be different, you know, if I was in Green Bay or, you know, if I was in
Minnesota,
right? It ain't really the same. But in Atlanta.
Well, see, what you're thinking of is the cultural implications of bringing Lamar Jackson.
It's going to make me money.
Really? Because when Michael Vick was there, early 2000s, man,
How easy with is that to sell?
Man, it was, man, look, with Lamar Jackson being who he is, and Lamar Jackson, I said this to you the other day, he looks like, when you picture somebody named Lamar Jackson, he looks and acts like just like a person who you would think would if they were named Lamar Jackson. Put Lamar Jackson, like, on the field-wise, you put Lamar Jackson, Bijan Robinson, the Algiers dude, Kyle Pitts, Drake London.
What are we talking about, Bryce? Like, that would,
woo!
I'm filling up my stadium.
No, you are.
We going it up.
It's, and see, that's the thing. That is the thing right there. That is why Arthur Blank said, I'll pass.
But see, Alex is saying, we take the degenerate, though.
Yeah, like, we go to him.
This danger. We don't want to. We gonna perv it up?
Okay.
Hey, look,
he was
look.
Never
to the original point. I don't understand how you can just. It'd be one thing if you don't. You know, the rumors are that Arthur Blank might not want Lamar Jackson. But you come out and you just say it. Like, we're good where we are. We don't need Lamar Jackson. All this stuff. Look at what this dude is doing.
Yeah, no, I can see. But again, we're talking in hindsight.
True.
Because if you just take Lamar Jackson, this is a guy who finished last year injured, finished the year before that injured, has yet to really play a complete campaign. Now, when he's on the field, dynamic. But now we're going into a contract year. He's looking for the richest NFL contract for a quarterback. And you have yet to really complete a campaign. And you're negotiating for yourself. I firmly believe that when you get to handling that much money, you need some help. Okay, and I'm not even saying go hire a white dude. You can get a black agent. Rich Paul's doing a great job.
No, shoot. We've had this conversation before. I said he should have hired David Mulgeta, should have hired Deshaun Watson's agent, Mulgeta. Because if David Mulgeta could get Deshaun Watson 250 guaranteed, now mind you, the Cleveland Browns, that's a good mark. Yeah. Like, they're a mark. But if you can get $250 million for a dude who's putting up Bill Cosby numbers, if you can do that and get that done for his black ass, What can Mulgeta have done for Lamar Jackson? He could have got him $2 billion.
But you see, so
$20 million, $15 million.
Trying to do it himself. I just think, though, that whole thing contributed to the issues Lamar Jackson was facing last year.
For a team like Atlanta, you still have a quarterback problem. They're really kind of stuck because they're too good to get a great pick this year. Mm-hmm. Right? So they're kind of in this. They have a really good roster, really good young foundation. You got to win while you still have those guys and they're inexpensive. So I've heard somebody, it's been bandied about, oh, maybe they should go, you know, Justin Fields is another Atlanta dude. Mm-hmm. You know, go bring in Justin Fields. I think Justin Fields has something, but I don't know who's going to be able to fix the fact that he holds on to the ball too long. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I don't know who can fix that specific problem. And if you bring in Justin Fields or trade for Justin Fields, you're going to have, it's extension time for him.
Right.
So you're going to have to pay him. You know what I'm saying?
But the amount of money that you would pay Justin Fields as opposed to Lamar Jackson or Freaky D is very different.
Right. It's different, but you still have to shell out some cash for, we're around extension time.
I'm shelling out cash for
an unknown, really.
An open box special.
And seriously, at best, what, like, Justin Fields in Atlanta, is that putting you over San Francisco? Is that putting you above Philadelphia? Is that putting you above... Like, it makes you better, no doubt.
You'll probably win the South.
You'll win the South, right?
I mean, that's wide open.
But I mean, what's the ceiling for it? Questions for Freaky A to consider.
Oh, don't put me in that.
No. Not A as in Alex, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking about Arthur Blank. I was like, whoa. We're talking about Freaky A.
I was about to say, I kind of like that. Freaky A.
I don't.
You got to change the pod into conversations with Freaky A.
Conversations with Freaky A.
That's it, man.
Hey, you know, Carmelo has a new podcast, 7 p.m. in Baltimore. We can do 7 p.m. in Stafford.
There you go, man.
Don't worry, I'll host. I don't even have to answer any more questions. I'll just be the host.
Just moderate the conversation.
Freaky A. When it's twin, Freaky B.
No, see. Now we're going to. Come on now. I work in a public school, man. I can't be having these problems.
Oh, man. And you didn't mention a team. The Detroit Lions.
Yes.
One of my favorite teams right now. The Fighting Dan Campbells. They won the division for the first time since George H.W. Bush was in office. Do we give Dan Campbell Coach of the Year at this point? Do we give it to him? We almost had to, right?
Like, it was almost looking like if D'Amico Ryans had got the Texans to the playoffs, I would say that D'Amico Ryans should get it. But to the point that you made, just for the historical fact of it, I think this is the most wins they've ever won in a 2-year span
ever.
Ever, yeah.
And it's like 20.
Yeah, because they said something about this is the most in it was they have some stats like the Detroit Lions haven't been this good since they were colored bathrooms.
Yeah,
like, or since like it's always stuff like that.
Have never won the division as it's been the NFC North. Like if they end up hosting a playoff game or being able to host a playoff game in Detroit, that is like that's magnificent. Big. Yeah, like you got to give them the coach of the year.
Shout out to Dan Campbell. Also, Dan Campbell with a whole lot of black people on his staff too.
Aaron Glenn,
defensive coordinator. You know, he had Deuce Daly a couple years ago. I'm like, look at Dan Campbell. Been going to the diversity, equity, and inclusion trainings and taking some things with them. Dan Campbell been going, you know, paying his money to the Urban League, NAACP. Shout out to Dan Campbell.
Shout out to Dan.
And you mentioned Detroit. We're going to, like, switch gears here to the college football playoff here. Our Texas Longhorns are in the playoff, guys.
Yes.
So, Bryce, you're the football coach. You're the expert here. The
football coach was a better one. I'll stop you before you get to expert.
Hey, man, look, man, we, you know, over here at the Game Plan Podcast, you know, we give people their props, give people their flowers. You know what I'm talking about? You didn't spend much longer in the film room watching tape on no difference between cover three, cover four, and all that than I ever have or care to. So, who do you think has the advantage just in terms of scheme, personnel, Texas or Washington?
Man, you know, I think this is kind of an interesting game because you'll see really a true dichotomy of styles, if you will. Like Washington is they aired out, you know, had a Heisman candidate there. So they're throwing the ball a lot, right? They're gonna challenge the secondary of the Longhorns. But Texas, despite having a great receiving core with Xavier Worthy and Adonai Mitchell, they're really run dominant, right? So even though they were in the Big 12, this is a SEC roster construction. So you'll see kind of a clash of this power football, this smash mouth football, and then this wide open game. And I think that if Texas can get out early, and Sark has generally been a good first quarter coach, right? The Longhorns slightly fade a little bit in the second half of some games. But if they can get out early, I think that ball control style will benefit them. Right. So I do see Texas winning that game against Washington.
I love the way that Bryce put it. I love the way that Bryce put it. Rematch of last year. I think I have Texas winning it too. I kind of got my fan hat on, and I'm more hoping that they'll win it than like schematically saying why. But I do think that Texas ends up winning this. I think it'll be a really good game. I really think that, you know, we discussed it a couple weeks ago, but I think that they got the four teams right as far as who got in and who they put in. You don't think so?
I don't think so.
Who you thought should have been in?
Who you thought should have been in? Yeah.
It's at this point it's a moot point, but I don't agree with the exclusion of Florida State. I don't see it.
Man, them dudes are gonna get drove.
But see, it's not about projecting the future.
Oh,
this is about who have been the four best teams to this point.
I think that's what they say, but this is really a television show. So they're like, all right, let's put together the best TV show.
Well, right. Like, well, and that's what it becomes. But if this is about truly football. You left out, and this is when you lay the facts bare, this is when it becomes quite odd. You left out an undefeated Power 5 conference champion.
That is true.
I mean, let's just leave it there. That is ridiculous. And I don't see a way that you can do that.
I think once Alabama, we talked about it a couple weeks ago, once Alabama beat Georgia, not only was Texas in by virtue of that they beat Alabama, Georgia's out because Florida State ended up when it beat Louisville, now it's like, all right.
Yeah.
Now, do you go with, because Alabama as a team, they're peaking at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I think they're going to have a whooping to put on Michigan.
Well, they're going to
whoop them.
Here's my issue with Michigan. Michigan plays maybe two good teams with like real offenses, with real competent offenses. Because in the Big Ten, offensively, they reject modernity. Like, they don't know how to play no offense out there. Ohio State can put a little something together. But past that, how many teams are they playing where the talent level is approximate or exceeds the talent level that Michigan has? So, if Michigan can't run the football, Michigan has to pass the ball, who play receiver at Michigan? Alabama probably, at least in my estimation, probably has the best corner tandem in America with Terrion Arnold and Kool-Aid. Can they, like, that's just been my question with Michigan this entire time. If Alabama loads up, stops the run, can their receivers win on the outside? Can their receivers get separation? If they can,
and J.J. McCarthy can make the throws, they'll win. If they don't, they won't.
So you think Alabama will be able to stop them in the box?
I do.
You know, that's interesting because Michigan's kind of ran on pretty much everyone they faced. They haven't really been, haven't really struggled to move the ball.
I feel like the last two times I've seen them in the playoff, especially that Georgia game 2 years ago when Georgia wore them out.
Oh, yeah.
And TCU didn't wear them out, but TCU put up, what, like 55 on them?
Yeah. Well, but the TCU thing is kind of flash in the pan, right? Because it's like they play TCU, you know, Gillespie was running the stack on defense, so they're running 3-3 stack. And then offense, who was the coordinator? It was before Browse. I think he's at Clemson now. Right. So Garrett Riley is running the offense. So I think they kind of had a lot of the element of surprise. Right. So I don't think they out-physicaled Michigan at all.
Handled them up front. At least all Michigan's O-line couldn't handle TCU's D-line, which wasn't that big.
Well, but that's what I'm saying. So it's not particularly the defensive line because it was really just three of them. I think it's the different looks that running the 3-3 stack allowed them to get into. So they were able to stun into certain things. They were able to stem to certain things. And I think it kind of, you know, you line up, I come off the ball, I come out of the huddle, I'm the center, and I look, I got three defensive linemen, so I'm making my call. And then when that picture changes post-snap, you know, now we're having to adjust on the fly. And that's what that defense does. It makes you adjust, right? So it may be three down linemen, but there's always a fourth, always a fifth coming. And I'm guessing where that guy is coming from.
That's fair. That's fair. I think Michigan's going to have trouble, though. I do. I think Michigan's going to think that's a game Alabama wins. We said this a couple weeks ago. This is Saban's best coaching job that he's probably ever done in terms of a team like growing and like in developing throughout the year.
They are peaking at the right time.
Yeah. Milroe has gotten better as the year's gone on. The receivers, Jermaine Burton, Isaiah Bond, they've gotten better. So I think Alabama's probably going, we're going to see Alabama in Houston at NRG Stadium. Now, does Texas get there? I'm not sure. And here's why I say I'm not sure. Ken, we've been fans of this team for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Every time we think they're going to turn a corner, bam, here it comes. Every time you think Charles is going to do better, every time you think Charles is going to stop coming in late, stop smelling like some other woman's perfume.
Charles.
Right? Every time Helen got to thinking that, guess what happened? Right? It wasn't until Charles got shot in his back. He finally, well, she had to dump him in the tub.
Yeah, but you could argue Texas was already dumped in the tub.
Look, man, point being,
you're just nervous.
That's nervous, scared, man. You can never just be. It's a nerve-wracking experience. You're just waiting every single day for the other shoe to drop. You're just waiting for something, for a Texas thing to happen, right? I've enjoyed watching them this season, but every time it's just been so nerve-wracking. So I've just been like, you know what? I'm trying to just enjoy it because it's been 15 years since we've actually been good. So that's why I'm like, hey, whether they win a game in the playoff or not, would I like for us to win a game in the playoff? Absolutely. But man, we here. I need to just be grateful for that.
But you know, watching Texas play football is kind of like, you know, when your game wouldn't work as a kid and you put it in and like, I don't care and pretend to look away. And then you're like, oh, it'll work now because I acted like I didn't care. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of the same experience. So you're like, hey, man, whatever happens. Because if you invest too much, like, it's just not going to work.
Oh, trust me. As a Cowboys fan as well, I know the pain. All
but see, so that's an interesting thing to bring up because I was telling somebody that being a Texas fan is the closest I've ever felt to being a Dallas Cowboys fan.
Absolutely.
And to be both a fan of both of those teams, I have to imagine, like Alex, you go through a lot of, what'd you say, gin?
Seagram's gin.
Shout out to Seagram's gin.
It hurts. It hurts because obviously being a Cowboys fan, what is like the narrative around Cowboys fans, right? Like
delusion.
Y'all think y'all gonna win every year, right?
Delusion.
Now, of course, there had like every year I don't think we gonna win a Super Bowl. But for the most part, there have been times in my life where I'm like, this team this year can do it if everything goes the right way.
Okay, I could win the lotto if everything goes the right way.
Sure, that's fair. But that's part of being a fan, right? Like, and the Cowboys are such a national team. They're always on news, right? They're always getting coverage. So, like, you, like those high school years with, like, that Tony Romo, DeMarco Murray. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. That year, I didn't have any expectations coming in. But, like, when we started off, like, I want to say like 5-1.
Yeah.
And we beat Seattle in Seattle.
Yeah.
I said, oh, we going to the Super Bowl. Like you couldn't tell me nothing. And it became routine. Like we had the best O-line in the league that year. Like we were just rolling through people. And we get to
Green Bay.
Yeah. We get to Green Bay. And that hurt.
And then you always think that you're going to recreate it.
Can't do it. You know what you look like? You had that moment, like you went back to that moment. You were watching that game and you saw it happen. Because I had that moment when I watched Texas, when it's third and long.
Yeah.
Because every time I see a third and long, I think that idiot Tyler Orlando is going to call another casino blitz. Alex, every time. And I'm like, for the love of God, can we just drop eight?
The only thing that separates it is that as a Texas fan, I've seen a championship.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the only thing. Like I've seen a championship, and that is something like people that are not like true fans, they can't understand it. But when you are a true fan of a team and your team is the last one standing, it's not a bitter feeling. It's not a better feeling. And the last team that I'm waiting on is the Dallas Cowboys, because I've seen LeBron James teams do it. They've done it four times. I've been good for 4 years, right? But
it's been he said, I don't need another hit.
I want one more. I want one more, and then I'm going to rehab. But them Dallas Cowboys have kept me scratching for years trying to get just one puff. Because as a kid, I used to have a Cowboys mattress, man. I used to have a Cowboys comforter, so I'd have to sleep in that.
You were just swaddled in depression right there. But,
and let me rephrase being a kid. I was 17. So when Green Bay, like you said, when it takes you back, I was at AAU practice at HBU. I'll never forget. I had to go to practice after that. After they said it wasn't a catch.
You airballed everything, didn't you?
I didn't play well at all. You see, I'm coaching now. It hurts. It hurts, man. I could go on and on. I could go on. We're talking about Texas, though.
Honestly, as a fan, though, like that does feel so good, right? And you can never, honestly, I don't even want to say like recapture that feeling until it happens again. Like for me, being a Spurs fan, 5 championships since I've been alive. The feeling, like, it feels excellent, but it also makes you appreciate how good your team is.
No doubt.
When they're competent. Because right now, we got Big Parlay and we're cheeks.
No, because
we're horrible.
You can't describe it. And you can honestly do a whole podcast about this, like about fandom.
Yeah.
But like everybody becomes a fan of a team as a kid for different reasons, whether it be the player, whether you like the colors, whether that's what your parents like. But you pick a team and the most loyal fans stay with that team. And you go through down
until LeBron leaves. Then you go to. I've been saying this team for years.
Are you still a Cavs fan?
Well, you know, you always got to love the state of Ohio. You know, you got
to. Why do I have to love the state of Ohio?
I still watch him every now and then. I like Donovan Mitchell. You know, Jared Allen, Evan Mobley.
Did you watch him during them years when it was Kyrie Irving? And what's the fool?
Oh God, no.
Who's the dude who had a stroke on the plane because he had too many of them gummy worms?
Oh, Dion Waiters.
Did you watch him when it was?
Absolutely.
Kyrie. No, I ain't gonna lie. Hey, Dion Waiters was a bucket though. Hey, like, he could hoop.
Come on. Hey, he got a ring with the Lakers. He got a ring with Bron.
How much weed do you think him and J.R. Smith were in there smoking?
Oh, you know they was in the bubble too.
Oh, yeah, you know they was going crazy.
But yeah, I mean, you start to become a fan for different reasons, and then like once your team really is like really good that 1 year, you're like, yeah, oh, we're gonna win it. Like, I can think about being a Heat fan when LeBron and D-Wade and them joined up, and I was like, oh, okay, we're gonna beat Dallas. And then we got whooped, like wiped off the floor. They lost on their home court, and then it was a lockout.
Yeah.
So the season didn't start in October. It started Christmas Day.
Christmas, yeah.
So that was my freshman year in high school. It was so much trash being talked. And then you had to wait on it, too. Like, all these LeBron choke memes and all this stuff. Like,
oh, yeah. It was going crazy. Oh, it was crazy.
My gosh. And so, like, that year, you really had to be confident in who you were. You really had to be confident in being a LeBron fan.
Right? You know, I'm not going to lie. It takes a special person to be a LeBron James fan.
Man.
Right? And I know you're a LeBron James fan. I got another buddy. Shout out to my boy Huff. He's a LeBron James fan. And it just takes a special person.
Bryce, sometimes during that season, some nights, I had to take a bath and just like contemplate, like, did I pick the right person to be a fan of? Because we couldn't beat Chicago during the regular season.
He's been recontemplating his life.
Duh. Cowboys games and like those games that year. We were losing to all the contenders. We were losing to Chicago.
Indiana.
We were losing to New York. Indiana wasn't there yet, but like I know it was Chicago and New York because Melo had just got to New York. Yeah. And we split with Oklahoma City because Oklahoma City was a new thing. Mm-hmm. And so then we almost lose to Boston. We get to we win two in a row. Then we lose three straight. We're down 3-2 in Boston. Then the Bron game happens, the 45. Then we go to Oklahoma City.
Paul Pierce is still bitter.
Yeah, Paul Pierce is still bitter about that. But then we go to Oklahoma City, right? And Oklahoma City is the favorite. Like, they are the league's best.
Yeah.
And they just kind of wiped the floor with them. And it really wasn't even that great of a series when you look back at it. But
no.
I was like, we finally reached the mountaintop. And all of that to go and almost lose it the next year to San Antonio after we won like 27 straight games.
You didn't have to do me like that.
I'm sorry, Alex.
Man, because to this day, I still remember where I was. I was standing right downstairs. Oh, yeah. I'm getting ready to call NBAstore.com. I'm like, yes, give me the hat, give me the shirt, give me all of it. Give me the commemorative Sports Illustrated magazine. And then Ray Allen hit that shot. I collapsed right there on that floor. Collapsed. They lost game 6 and game 7. I remember after game 7, I didn't even want to watch the post game. I didn't want to watch any interviews. I turned the TV off. It was 8 p.m. Turned the TV off, walked up here, walked to my room, went to bed. I was like, it hurts.
What would it take you to leave a team now?
Because now we're talking about fandom. What would it take you to like quit a team? Be like, you know what? This relationship is doing nothing more for me. I have to go.
I'm trying to think. Because the Cowboys have pushed me there multiple times.
You packed your bags?
Like it was some things like I can't even support you guys anymore. But I don't know what would fully push me over the edge. But I know like now, if LeBron came in, like now, if LeBron was in his prime and doing what he did back then, I probably wouldn't be a fan. Because like one thing that like you guys can appreciate, because Alex is a Spurs fan, is a Steelers fan, it's a model of consistency, right? Like LeBron is the only thing consistent on his team. Everything gets changed around all the time. It's never like we won. Well, let me put it like this. So you think about all the other dynasties.
Right.
You think about the Lakers. You think about the Warriors. They had bumps, but they didn't have these hurdles that LeBron teams do. You know what I mean? Like, they won 27 games in a row that year. They played San Antonio. And if not for that Ray Allen shot and that great fourth quarter, they were going to lose. And you might look back and they only won one championship.
Out of four.
Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you look back and you're like, okay, you guys dominated, but did you really dominate when you look at the teams that did dominate? Like, you look at those Michael Jordan Bulls teams that never lost three games in a row in like a three-year stretch.
That's nuts.
The Warriors with Steph, Clay, and KD just, okay, you know, you might go through some bumps. When it's time to hoop, okay, it's not close. 2000s Lakers, Shaq and Kobe, it's not close. Like now, like LeBron is 38. Obviously, he's past his prime. He's not what he used to be. But we lose on Christmas Day. You do an interview. Oh, well, we don't feel like we're where we need to be to compete.
Really?
Well, but you know, so ever since I've been watching LeBron James, right? It's like, you know, they give some of us brothers a little media training and we just go overboard because his messaging is very pointed through the media. Everything he does is important. It's like even post game, right? They set the mic on the table. He doesn't lean forward on the table. He picks the microphone up and leans back, mm-hmm. right? I'm not going to slouch. You know, so he has this media training. It's a lot of passive aggressive comments to his teammates through conversations with the media. It's like, what was the thing with Kevin Love? It was like
fitting out, whatever.
You know, it's things like that, right? It's comments like that. Even we're not where we need to be. And all those things are just kind of like, they're a message to the person who's asking me, but it's not for you, right? It's for those other guys. Right. And I think personally, instead of doing that, he just needs to go have a conversation with Anthony Davis. That's where the Lakers' problems begin.
He needs to have a conversation with Darvin Ham.
I think, you know, this is when we clear the floor out. Kennedy Miller, go.
Listen, I like D Ham. As a coach, you can respect this too. I don't really like to criticize other coaches.
Absolutely.
Because it's so much that goes into it.
And we won't never know.
So many personalities that you have to manage, so many things that you have to, and I couldn't even imagine being the head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers with LeBron James and Anthony Davis. That being said, it is too many knowledgeable basketball minds to be putting out the product that I'm watching for this past week and a half. After we won the in-season tournament, which was with a formula, by the way.
Yes.
You completely negate said formula and like, oh, okay, we're going to go in this heavy defensive lineup because we lost to San Antonio and we lost to Dallas and we lost to – who cares? Like, you made these midseason trades last year. You found a formula that worked. You got some bigger wings around LeBron and AD. Take some of the pressure off of them defensively. Got some more shooting with D'Lo, who we know is streaky. That's what he's just going to be. That's what he's going to be. He's going to be streaky. Okay? Austin Reeves kind of figured out where he's going to be. I think he's more of your fourth best. Like, he should be your fourth scorer on the team than your third, especially with LeBron and AD. But he's slotting into that third scoring role right now. But I felt like you knew your needs that you needed to address in the offseason. You needed more size, and you needed to kind of retain your guys and just get chemistry. So you brought in Jaxson Hayes, which has been a terrible signing. I know he went to Texas, but he needs to go back to where he needs to go back to New Orleans, wherever he came from, because he's not the JaVale McGee role that I thought he was going to be. But you brought in Christian Wood just to give him DNPs.
That one is the one I truly don't understand.
Like, that's just – I don't understand it. Because why – understanding that you have a need, who did you just lose to? You got swept by Denver, one of the best big men of this generation in Jokic.
That must have hurt for you to say,
too. It does. It does, okay? Because if you go back through our podcast, I picked the Lakers in six, and I was standing firm on it until it went 3-0. Okay,
You were.
The games were close. The games were close.
Yeah, but there's no awards for being in a tight loss.
It's this fandom. It screams at you. It makes you have
irrational
thoughts.
Why do you sound like? Why you sound like a dope fiend? You're like, man, what's it just get to my system?
It starts replaying because then you look at Denver and you see KCP. Who I gotta take a break. Hold on. You see KCP. Who we ridiculed on this show. Maybe not we, me. I ridiculed on this show because he couldn't make a layup that first season LeBron was in there. It's a clip. LeBron is yelling at him, shoot the ball, shoot the ball. Now he goes and he has a good second season. And so we trade him for Russell Westbrook. And that's where the fall started. And then I see KCP against us and he kills us. Like and every time we play him now, he kills us. He just goes on a tear. But that was a side note. The issues were you needed to get bigger. Anthony Davis has said time and time again he doesn't want to play the five.
Which I think is selfish, by the way.
It's selfish, but it's also his preference.
Yeah.
Like,
we don't care about his preference.
No, okay.
So tin man.
Get a big in there. So to let him play the four, and in the end of games, he'll play the five. Well,
but see, what I'm confused about is we have Anthony Davis, who is what, 6'10", 7 feet tall?
7 feet tall.
He's 7 feet tall. He is the big. Or is he just, what was Bomani say? Is he tall a big man. Or is he a tall man?
He's a big man, but he does not, for an 82-game stretch, he don't want to have to cover all them dudes the entire time.
You know what that sounds like to me? Tall man behavior.
That's
tall
man. It kind of is tall man behavior.
What kills me about Anthony Davis, what really hurts is that you remember in Bad Boys 2, that last scene in Bad Boys 2, when Marcus put that hole in Johnny Tapia's head?
Yeah.
And then Will Smith was like, that's how you shoot. From now on, that's how you shoot. I feel like when I watch Anthony Davis have a performance of 42-17 and 6 block, that's what I want to see consistently. This is year, what, 10, 11?
Yeah.
That's not what he is ever going to be.
It's the same as D'Lo. He is who he is at this point.
And so knowing that still in the year of our Lord, 2023, about to be 2024, LeBron James has to be your best player. And he's about to be 39 in like three days. That's way too much on a guy with the amount of miles on his body. And you can tell LeBron is declining.
Yes.
Slowly, right? It's happening because LeBron James, while he's still a very, very playing at a very, very high level, 10 years ago. 5 years ago, we would have been talking about this team being in the finals. Just the mere fact they have LeBron James.
Without a doubt. And whatever version of Anthony Davis brings you.
Now, a LeBron James team, they are, 10th or 11th
Like, 9th, tied for 10th probably.
In the play-in. Like, they may or may not make the playoffs. So, this thing is declining. So, this is at a point where you got to figure something out coaching-wise. Or make a move here, a move there, and... DJ Fresh Prince. Speaking about another team where they got to figure something out, the Golden State Warriors got a lot to figure out, because I said this to you, think through text. The Golden State Warriors needed to go revive Jerry Krause from the dead, because Jerry Krause would have got Klay Thompson and Draymond Green up out of there.
No doubt.
And they tried to do this thing where they developed the young guys. Kuminga, Wiseman, Moses Moody, Jordan Poole. Yeah, it could have worked. But my thing is, at least for me, I don't know if you can develop players and still try to win now. Because James Wiseman is off in Detroit, and they're the worst team I've seen in a long time. Well, and he's getting DMPCDs. Kuminga, Moody. It didn't work with Jordan Poole. I mean, probably because Draymond socked him in the face. Right. But it hasn't quite worked. And a part of me is always thinking, can you realistically develop players when you have a guy who commands the gravity that Steph Curry does? You know what I'm saying? Andrew Wiggins hasn't been good this year at all. And now they're out there, and I watched them play a couple of days ago, and they got some dude out there, the white guy Porzinski,
the rookie.
But he looked like, with a last name like that, you would think he does not belong on a basketball court. You would think that's a cop who turns his body cam off. They got a lot of problems because they still cannot create a shot outside of Steph Curry. And they didn't fix that when they exiled Jordan Poole to Washington and got back really nothing in the form of 40-year-old Chris Paul.
Well, but think about it. How many shots were the Warriors truly creating before, right? Like, outside of Steph Curry being the magician that he is, who else on that team could create shots?
Which is why they went and got Kevin Durant.
Right. But so you take, I mean, obviously Kevin Durant, best basketball player, I think, on the planet right now.
Still?
Right. What? I think there's an argument to be made.
Giannis?
Right? There's an argument to be made. I'll listen to him. That's just, whatever. Okay. I hear your Giannis. I hear some
screaming.
Other things.
He's screaming his argument. Right.
Right. But, anyway, I think Kevin Durant aside, Klay Thompson's never been a shot creator. Right? No. He scored all those points on, 9 dribbles? Mm-hmm. So, I mean,
Coming off screens.
Yeah, he's not particularly a threat to force the action with the ball in his hand. Andrew Wiggins has never been a premier shot creator. And then Trey?
Give you 20. He's a guy that can give you 20, maybe not efficiently.
Well, but that's the other thing, right? When I think of a guy, like when we're talking shot creation, that dude's a bucket, right? Like we talk KD. KD creates his own shot. He's a bucket.
Oh, no.
Now, everybody's not also a 7-foot guard, essentially.
Right, right.
But he creates his own shot. Draymond Green, he's never created any shots, right? He'll hit a shot, but that's not his thing. So I think the Warriors' issues, as they've gotten older, have just become more
noticeable,
right? Yes. Because they've never been a team where guys can go get their own bucket outside of Steph for extended periods, at least.
And I think the hardest part for them is now, once after the Achilles and the knee, Klay Thompson has not been the same defender.
Right.
He hasn't been the same defender. And now he can't shoot either. Like, he's shooting, I think, 35% from the field.
And that's the problem. So when they were winning,
he was shooting 40.
But even outside of the shooting, he was defending really well. So you tried out a lineup with Klay, tried out a lineup with Dre. You tried out a lineup, even when they added Andrew Wiggins.
Iguodala.
Back to the death lineup, right, with Iguodala. They can defend anything. So I can hide Steph Curry, right? Because we can switch everything and defend it all. But now you look at this team, you're like, hey, they ain't so much defending everything. And so if I'm hemorrhaging points on the defensive end and I'm not creating buckets on the other end, it's going to get ugly.
And it's so much worse now that Draymond Green, he lost his shot like 2-3 years ago. They got him and Looney out there at the same time. And all them fools are both doing is dribble handoffs, set a screen. And unless it is like put back or wide open layup, you got your four and your five give you literally nothing offensively. You're basically playing 3-on-5.
So the guys who are defending, like if I'm defending Kevon Looney, right, the moment he steps out past the free throw line, I'm sagging into the paint.
Which triggers the dribble handoff.
Right. But
because like you gonna sag because at this point you gotta give up something. Like you gotta give up something. And so like I'm finna be in deep help, which they know. Then let me get it to Kevon or let me get it to Dre and let's trigger this dribble handoff because when Steph or Klay is coming off, now you're late.
Exactly.
And if you help too much, then I can dump it down to them and then we can make the right read. You guys are absolutely right. The problems are being compounded because of the age, right? So
Clay on the defensive end is also Clay, not the same on the offensive end with the speed. Like with these injuries, I'm not coming off that dribble handoff as quick as I used to be anymore. I'm not running through those pin down screens as quick as I used to be anymore. It's easier to guard me. Same thing with Draymond Green. Like you look back at the 2019 Western Conference Finals. He's getting it off the rim and he's pushing.
He's a tank.
I didn't realize how fast he was until I see how slow he is now.
Yeah.
And I was like, golly. And so you look at how good they were defensively, they can get stops because they were playing against like Portland. And Portland was up. They got swept. They were winning every game at halftime.
By double digits.
And got swept. Because once them dudes start getting stops and they start running, and then the Steph Curry effect of like hitting two threes in a row, it just like breaks it the opens team.
And you know, Steph Curry is generational, right? So it's a guy who bends the geometry of the court.
Yeah.
Right. So you got to defend that guy when he crosses half court. And so it's all these odd angles now for help defense and recovery. And it puts a lot of pressure, even in transition. So yeah. You got a guy, he's coming across half court in transition. You're like, oh, I don't have to defend until he gets a 3-point line. Well, with Steph, you do.
Yep.
Because he'll take the pull up three in transition.
And what hurts them now is for the most part, they had a vertical presence for most of their time. So like
McGee,
they had JaVale. Even the early years, they had Bogut who could catch lobs or who could throw lobs. Like, he was a very good passer. And then you had KD. You know, when you go on a five, like a small ball lineup, you could put KD at the five, and he's 7 foot, right? But now, Kevon Looney, who's had multiple hip surgeries, like, he can't jump over a phone book. Like, and Kevon is good in his role. Draymond is good in his role, but you don't have that one presence to where you come off the dribble handoff, right? They cheat up, you dump it down. Draymond can't throw that lob no more. There's nobody to catch that lob anymore.
Yeah, but that shrinks your pick and roll window because right. I know they come off the pick and roll. If I can kind of hedge and drop, yeah. Right? If I'm the show guy, I can kind of get in that bounce pass window versus before, you know, they would go up or they'd go under.
Yeah.
Right? So it kind of makes the Warriors a little bit, I don't want to say easier to defend, right? Because Steph Curry will still give you, you know, 33 points on, what, 10 threes.
And the league has changed. Like, when you look back to when they were, like, really dominating, like, 2016, they weren't, like, the league wasn't ready for that. The league wasn't ready for that. Cause, like, even the teams that kind of gave them some problems, like, you can't put Zach Randolph and Marc Gasol out there with them dudes, how they was running like that. Well, like, they would just hope to be physical with them and wear them down.
The league is caught up.
But so the league is caught up.
Every team has a guy who's going to take that half-court three-point shot.
And the league has gotten bigger, too.
Yeah.
So, like,
we got big dudes who can do small people things.
Exactly.
Now. Tall
so,
men.
Like you. Yeah. Tall men. So, like, you look at the Warriors last time in the – well, they won in 2022. But with KD, that was 2019. 2020, the Lakers win. Their starting lineup is Bron, Danny Green, who's 6'6", Kuzma, 6'9", AD, 7 foot, JaVale, 7 foot. Then you bring in Dwight off the bench. Then you look at Milwaukee, Giannis, Brooke, Chris Middleton. Like, ain't nobody going small ball no more. They got big people that can do small things. And that's what's kind of changing. That's where I think they did not adjust for this year.
So what you're basically saying, you saying time is slipping away from them, Ken?
Time slipping away from me. Yeah.
And we are also out of time here on the Game Plan Podcast. So, Kennedy Miller, my guy, got to thank you once again for hanging out with your boy. Where can folks find you on Twitter, man?
You can find me on Twitter at _KennedyMiller_. Can I just say, this has felt like such a great podcast. I don't know, because I don't usually have a mic. I'm just like talking.
Yeah.
I really felt like I'm sitting on the couch today. I really felt like I was part of a good podcast.
It's like the Joe Budden podcast.
Yeah, I feel like I was part of the Joe Budden podcast. You know? So I went in depth in my Cowboys and LeBron painful memories. So it just felt like I was really a part of a good podcast today. That's all.
My twin brother, Bryce Cooper, defensive coordinator extraordinaire. Where can they find you on Twitter? Do you want people to find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter if you're interested. It's just a lot of coach things, so you'll see a lot of football breakdowns. You'll see my son on there because I tend to post our Christmas card and things like that. But you can find me at Coach B. Goodwin. Coach B. Goodwin. I'd also like to thank you, Alex, for having me on. You know, it's always a pleasure. And I really enjoy it. You know, I like having a chance to sit down and talk a little ball, so even basketball, which is not particularly my forte, but I enjoy the conversation. It, like you say, it kind of feels like the barbershop, you know, without, you know, some of the more wilder ideas of the barbershop.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You can find me on Twitter at Alex Goodwin, TSM again. That's on the artist formerly known as Twitter at Alex Goodwin, TSM. That's T as in Texas, S as in Stanford, M as in Michigan. Follow the show on Instagram at underscore the game plan podcast. What's up, Ken?
One more thing. I think we've all voted today to change Alex's name on Twitter to Freaky A.
Freaky A. I think we need to see that. Maybe not the ad name, but definitely instead of Alex Goodwin, it should be in quotation marks, Freaky A.
That's the title of this episode, Freaky A.
Freaky A. I think that needs to be a thing.
Wherever you're listening, however you're listening, we appreciate you guys for listening. For Bryce Goodwin and for Kennedy Miller, my name is Alex Goodwin. This has been the Game Plan Podcast, and we will see you guys next time. Y'all take it light.